coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today, film reviews editor at The Wrap, El Mero Mero of Christmas, ladies and gentlemen, Alonzo Duralde is in the building. Alonzo.
Hi,
Alonzo. What is good with you, sir?
Well, we are recording this on the day before Halloween, mm-hmm. All Hallows Eve Eve.
The penultimate.
Yes. And, you know, there's a lot of things to love about this season, the changing of the leaves and the, you know, bags of candy at the drugstore. But one of the things that I look forward to as an Angelino every year is the appearance of the $1,000 fine silly string prohibited sign that comes up on Sunset Boulevard, because apparently this has been a thing in the past on Halloween where people silly stringed so much that they clogged the sewers or something. So there's a sign, and there's also, like, I wish I could show you all the quotation marks that shouldn't be in here, but it's like, quote, $1,000 fine, unquote, silly string prohibited, 12 a.m. October 31st to 12 o'clock noon November 1st. It is, quote, and all cap, illegal to possess, use, sell, or distribute silly string in public areas. And I love that distribute is how they mean, like, to spray it, I guess? Unless they're just handing it out. I don't know. Anyway, I live for the silly string sign. It comes up the last week of October, and I saw it today, and it gave me all the Halloween feels.
There you go. There you go. Silly string. The streets are feeling silly string. If you're out there, be careful with your silly string.
Do not get arrested. It is a, quote, $1,000, unquote, fine.
Oh, that's fantastic. We have special guests tonight, comedians, hosts of the Bechdel Cast, Jamie Loftus and Caitlin Durante.
Hi.
Yes.
Caitlin, you are to my left. I'll ask you first. What's good with you?
Well, Alonzo mentioned bags of candy, and what's good with me is Reese's Peanut Butter Pumpkins on sale post Halloween. That's what's good.
Reese's Peanut Butter Pumpkins. So is there peanut butter inside this pumpkin when you bite it? Talk
yeah,
to
it's
me.
Just, it's, you know how, like, every holiday, Christmas time, there will be the trees, and, like, Easter, they'll have, like, the egg-shaped ones.
Yes.
They're better than Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, I think we can all agree. Because the chocolate peanut butter
ratio is whatever it's
way
all
better.
About.
Yes.
Too much
so
peanut
the
butter.
Cups are bullshit, but anytime, I mean, they're still good. But anytime you've got a holiday when you've got, like, yeah, the pumpkin-shaped ones or the eggs for Easter, like, those are the best.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. I'm not aware of these. I will be on the lookout.
Please.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, what is good with you?
I was thinking of something that was good last year, and I've been looking for it. I'm just going to, like, manifest it, put it out there, because Caitlin, you were talking about a Halloween CVS fave. Something I saw at CVS last year, and I'm a CVS frequenter. I go every day. I live near a CVS.
Favorite thing to buy at the CVS.
Oh my God. Mike's Hard Lemonade and a soup. That's,
and you've got the card, right?
I've got the card. I scanned my card. Nice. And I was like, what if the soup's on sale? But last year they had this thing. It was like a Halloween novelty item called Twerking Mummy. And it was a mummy. And I was, at the time, I was like, $30 is a lot for Twerking Mummy. I was like, maybe I'll be in financial shape next year for a Twerking Mummy. And I toiled all year.
Yeah.
And I was doing better this year. Twerking Mummy discontinued.
Oh, no!
No Twerking Mummy.
When opportunity knocks, you must answer.
I should have put it on credit.
If you would have put the Twerking Mummy on layaway, that would have been the greatest goddamn thing ever.
I still have the video on my phone, and I watch it sometimes.
Ricky, what's good?
Oh, thank you, Alonzo. So, you know, since we're all talking about candy and Halloween candy, can I just say the candy corn of sandwiches is back, y'all. I've been informed the McRib is with us once again.
Oh, that's exciting.
It is so exciting. I have not had one yet, but there is a McDonald's in my check the McRib locator. There's a McDonald's
in
my
app?
Nip.
for that?
I don't have the app on my phone. I just go directly to the website.
Amber Alert. Your phone just starts.
That, I mean,
it's buzz on the street. Really. we need to take Karen Tongson out for one.
Yes,
she's never had one.
Another favorite thing about this is like I get information like this. I get texts. Just so much love starts coming in my direction about the return of the McRib. I see you all out there sending me the messages. I thank you. I plan on taking my girl out to a romantic dinner with a McRib. And
maybe they'll bring the lights down a little.
I'm hoping so. I'm going to bring a little champagne bucket with me, place it right next to the table. Oh, man, love is in the air, y'all. Love is in the air. Oh, can't wait. Can't wait. Hey, y'all, on today's episode, we are going to talk about witches be dancing. You cannot stop a witch from dancing. I called up my girl the other day. I said, girl, what you doing? She said, dancing. Oh, we are going to be talking about Suspiria, y'all. Suspiria. Plus, we will help some family movies pass the Bechdel test. And as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, it is time for our news roundup game called It A Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. Alonzo and I are going to read some news stories. Anybody can jump in with their take by answering these two simple questions that I ask. Is it important? Do I care? I'll go ahead and read this first one here because it's, my girl's from Chicago. It's being reported by Chicago Business that the directing duo Lana and Lily Wachowski are selling their Chicago studio and have no plans to work on any future projects. We all know they're famous for directing the Matrix trilogy. And, of course, my joint, Cloud Atlas. Sidebar, how do you feel about Cloud Atlas? That's going to determine how I rush, how you all do on the show today.
You know what? I did see it.
Yes.
You know what? It's fine.
That's it. You can stop right there. Good. That's it. You got it.
It's fine.
I did see it. I laughed. I cried.
There you go. See, this is going to be the greatest episode of all time. They also did a show for Netflix called Sense8 that ended last June. Fantastic show. We highly recommend you check that out. But many people are speculating that the Wachowskis are going to retire from filmmaking after this. Screenwriter C. Robert, is it Cargill? Am I pronouncing that right? Screenwriter C. Robert Cargill, he also wrote Doctor Strange and Sinister. He tweeted out, quote, "When I talked to Lana this summer, she said she felt pretty much done, like she accomplished everything she set out to do. I'm hoping inspiration and the boredom of a brief retirement brings them back, Soderbergh style." Also, rumors. Is this important? Do you all care?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's too bad April's not here because we have another excuse to talk about Jupiter ascending. I would hate to see the Wachowskis not active. Their stuff is so fascinating, even when I don't love it. I'm glad they're doing what they're doing, and you know, I'm glad that they got to give Sense8 a proper send off. But I would hate for them to walk away from this because I think there's nobody else like them right now.
Totally. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm big fans of their work, and what I also think is especially important is that they are two trans women and two, like, the few trans people who are working in Hollywood actively and, like, who can give visibility to trans people.
Yeah. Have you seen Sense8?
I haven't, no.
Oh, there's a great storyline, a great character in there, a trans character, and it's so fantastic.
I hope that they, I don't know, I mean, even if they stop directing, there's so many things they can do. Maybe they'll start a band.
Open a bakery. Who knows?
Maybe they'll start a traveling show. We don't know.
just don't podcast.
There's more than, exactly. As long as they don't start a podcast.
That's a podcast game. You right. Film critic Britt Haynes, they said that they're not sure if it's still the case, but last they heard things were not great between the Wachowskis. Have you heard anything like that?
I occasionally hear eighth hand accounts of some possible friction there, but you know, siblings bicker and have disagreements, but then they work it out. I don't know.
Yeah, I would hope that they are not done making movies, making TV. Yeah, I mean,
they're not the only trans filmmakers out there, but they're the only trans hitmakers.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's really nobody else in trans filmmaking.
That's
that,
what I mean. I don't mean to say that there aren't
belt.
Other
no,
trans filmmakers,
and,
but
you
yeah.
You didn't say that, but I'm just saying, like, they do represent not just that this sort of level of visibility, but, like, look at all the money they have made, mm-hmm. you know? So,
yeah.
like, they're very successful.
Totally.
Trans hitmakers could also be the name of their new band.
It'd
be cool.
A little on the nose, maybe.
It's a starting point.
Also, I think we can all agree that we need more Matrix sequels. Matrix
yes.
Revisited. Yes. Matrix re...
Combobulated.
Matrix recombobulated.
Keanu checks the mail. The Lake House 2.
There's a cinematic universe here that's not nearly been explored enough.
Oh, absolutely. I support all of this. Hugo Weaving, where you at? Alonzo, do you want to take this next story?
Sure. I mean, I'm soaking in it, but what the heck. This past week, beloved movie streaming service Filmstruck announced that it would be shutting down at the end of November.
R.I.P.
I'm very depressed about this. The service specialized in classic and indie films was the home of the Criterion Channel, which streamed many Criterion Collection titles. You could also find wonderful film intros by me for various LGBT films and the films of Eric Rohmer. Warner Media says it's shuttering Filmstruck because although it is a loyal audience, it has remained a, quote, largely niche service, unquote. Mm. Is this important? Do you care?
Super important. Extremely important. Dare I say important as fuck? Yeah. The last quote that you said, it being a largely niche service, that struck me as, like, I think we love the Criterion Collection and
sure.
we talk about it because we love movies. It sucks that people, when they think of the Criterion Collection, they think of it as kind of like some artsy, fartsy type thing.
Well, and even if it's true, I mean, even if it is niche, which admittedly it is. I mean, you know, like not niche is Adam Sandler on Netflix. Niche is the Criterion Collection and Filmstruck. But it's like the idea of streaming was this notion of like, oh, every film ever made, it's at my fingertips. I can just press a button and there it is. And, you know, not everything at your fingertips is going to be an Adam Sandler Netflix movie. Like some of it is going to be lesser known Ozu, and like mm-hmm. it should be there and there should be a home for it, and that's what Filmstruck was so great about. And it's sort of like, if they can't figure out a way to, I mean, obviously this was never going to be like minting money, but if they can't figure out a way to make this enough of a thing to appease their corporate overlord, where it be at Warner Brothers or AT&T or whoever's calling the shots on this, then it's like, we're screwed for getting access to this stuff because, yeah, it is inherently niche. And so if all we're going to get on the streaming platforms is non-niche, then we're screwed.
Yeah.
Well, because mm-hmm. the internet was like... That's what the internet is for niche, for better
totally.
Or worse.
Yes.
And I mean, I think this is super important. I was a subscriber. I'm going to miss it.
Yay.
And as AT&T also axed my job in a corner of the internet I worked for that was owned by them and Warner Media Forever, they just, for the exact same reason, they're like, well, we learned a lot of lessons. Everyone's fired. Peace out. And it's just like... Okay, fine. You know, AT&T wants to murder the internet, and so there's not going to be, like, I'm sort of curious of, like, what are people going to do of, you know, like, the niche communities will find a way to thrive somewhere, but where do you go from after losing a service like this is, like, very unclear.
Yeah. Know. It's kind of terrifying that they're the
Scary.
Gatekeepers of all these movies, and we won't have access to them, or at least... You know, in a library like this where you could just go and say, I want to watch this, like, you just don't have access to it until they say it's okay again.
I mean, Criterion did live on Hulu before Filmstruck happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that somebody is going to be visionary enough to be like, you know what, I'm not going to do, like, through-the-roof Stranger Things numbers on hosting the Criterion Collection, but it's worth it because it matters and because there's a devoted audience that wants to see this stuff. You
know?
And it's mm-hmm. probably consistent streaming numbers, if nothing else. It's like, you know, evergreen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally. When it was when the Criterion Collection was on Hulu, I was checking it on the regular.
Yeah.
Like it's I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm part of the problem when
because you didn't subscribe to Filmstruck.
Yeah. Damn it, Rick. Sorry, I'm sorry.
My mom was a subscriber and she was kind enough to share her password with me. Thanks, Mom. I must admit I didn't find myself using it that much. But it's so.
It always sucks when we lose a chance to watch more movies. I mean, I'm a proponent of that.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Mm. R.I.P. Alonzo, I hope you do well in your unemployment.
we dust ourselves off and we carry on.
That's what's up. The Motion Picture Association of America's Classification and Ratings Administration just turned 50 years old. If you're not familiar with this organization, they're the ones that rate the content of movies. According to them, majority of films they've rated have been given an R rating. Now, they launched in 1968, and since then, they've rated 29,791 films, and 57% of them have been rated R. this can be attributed to the fact that the PG-13 was only introduced in 1984. But while movies that are suitable for children can be rated G, PG, or PG-13, most adult films get an R rating. Is this important? Do you all care?
Is it just the news is that it turns 50 years old?
Are we supposed to sing happy birthday right now to the R rating?
The Big Mac turned 50.
Is that this week? Is that right?
I was at McDonald's last night and they were throwing some sort of demented party for the Big Mac. There was a sign.
How old's the McRib though?
I believe the McRib came out in 1984. I feel very confident
with
that answer.
Gen X sandwich.
It comes to the right room.
Yes.
Is it a coincidence that the PG-13 rating also came out? I was working
in a movie theater the summer of 1984, and I remember this was in the pre-digital days where we literally were sticking the little white letters into the black slides
yes.
of the titles, and there was a little rectangle underneath where this sort of like shiny bit of Mylar that had the ratings on it would go under the movie title, and I remember when the PG-13s arrived because it was a new thing for Red Dawn.
I thought anybody who worked in a movie theater was the coolest goddamn person in the world.
And
yeah.
you were right.
Yeah. So when I'd see them putting the letters on that board, or just watching them put the letters on the marquee, I would just be like, you guys are. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service.
I mean, you know, look, the ratings board obviously is rife with problems. You know, they're far easier on violence than they are on sex. They're far easier on studio movies than they are on indies. Mm. They really give a hard time to queer stuff, as even when it's like super innocuous. Mm. But it's better than what we had before. You know, we had the production code where, you know, you couldn't even, you know, mention that queer people existed and, you know, like crime always had to be punished at the end. And, you know, married couples, like, you know, couples that had to have one foot on the floor and they were in the bed.
Two beds in the bedroom.
Yeah, all of that nutty stuff. Like, I mean, we're better off done with that. And also, I think the ratings board got rid of these sort of like local censors in a lot of places. Like, you know, the phrase banned in Boston. Like, Boston used to have like a its own separate board. Dallas was the last one. I was living in Dallas and there was this board of people who had to approve every movie. And you would see in the movie ads, like in tiny print, under the rating, it would say like suitable except for, you know, LV, you know, their little code words, or not suitable. Mm. And any R-rated movie was automatically not suitable. And any movie that didn't get shown to the board got not suitable. And that was how they finally beat them, because there was this one, like, distributor guy in town who hated the board, wanted to get rid of them. And so they wound up not showing them Kenneth Branagh's Much Ado About Nothing. And then they called it not suitable. This guy was like, oh, really? Shakespeare's not suitable? And it finally got them shut down. But yeah, so you had these little local blue noses all over the place. And so I think the ratings board was designed to like have a uniform standard for that stuff.
So you just couldn't see an R-rated movie in all of Dallas?
No, you could see it, but the ads would all say
not suitable.
Yeah.
Which, unfit for human consumption.
To me, when I was a kid, I was like, if I see the rated R, I was like, I totally want to see that movie. I need to see that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Not suitable for young ages? Sounds perfect for me.
John Waters always said when he was a kid, like any movie that got condemned from the National League of Decency, that was his like, okay, got to go see that then.
Fun fact about Much Ado About Nothing, I do own it on DVD. And I understand why it might have been deemed unsuitable, because you see some flaccid penises in that movie.
Oh, is that right?
If I remember, I never forget a dick when I see it. So, I'm pretty sure.
Wow, that's a Keanu Reeves, isn't it? Michael Keaton?
I think it's some extras or something.
Background penis.
Yeah. Oh, I don't remember. I'll go home and rewatch it.
You just said you never forget. A glaring contradiction in your testimony.
I don't remember who the penises belong to. Okay. I just remember.
They're free floating. Okay.
Give me a foreground or I'm leaving the theater.
Yo, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about Suspiria. You are listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hello, are you looking for a new comedy podcast? In which case, can I draw your attention to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast? It's a fictional industry podcast for the beef and dairy industries. It won Best Comedy at the 2017 British Podcast Awards, and it features wonderful guests such as Greg Davis.
To my knowledge, it's the only cow circus that's ever existed in this country. In rural Russia, every small town has a cow circus.
Josie Long.
You should have a beef. Have a beef with them. I have a beef with you. I will have a beef with you. Come round my house and I'll have a beef with you.
And Andy Daly.
That virus never existed. There was never any such thing as a mad cow disease. That was all an illusion that Big Lamb came up with.
That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast. Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts from. And I would recommend starting at episode one. Bye.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Join me in the studio today are...
Caitlin Durante.
And Jamie Loftus.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about Suspiria. Now, usually when we have guests on the show, they watch the movie that we are going to talk about.
Okay.
But this actually is perfect. Of all the movies for someone not to have seen, this is great. I want to know from you, Jamie, what you think Suspiria is about. And then Alonzo will tell us what Suspiria was about.
I saw it and I don't know. I'm envious of the person who didn't see it.
What do you think this movie is about?
I spoiled it pretty hard for myself. In my defense, it's showing in exactly one theater in the entire city across directly an hour away from where I live. However, as far as I know, it is about Dakota Fanning's wearing a wig. It's about Tilda Swinton.
Dakota Johnson. Dakota Johnson. Melanie Griffith. Already your movie's more interesting.
Wearing a wig. I know that it's 900 hours long.
Yes.
I know that Tilda Swinton plays a distracting number of parts in it.
Yes. Norbit level of parts in this movie.
I was like, really? She's basically Tyler Perrying because she plays an old man.
She's all the clumps.
She's literally DMing out in this movie. I know that there's witch dancers. Mm-hmm. And I know that Tom York is involved.
Yes, Tom York does the soundtrack for the film, the score for the film.
And that some people and that it's polarizing, and some people think it rocks and some people think it sucks. That's what I know.
There you go. All right, perfect. That's Alonzo, now you tell us.
Is that right?
What is Dakota Fanning? That's pretty dead on, actually. So Dakota Johnson plays a woman who's been raised in a Mennonite community in the U.S., but she must dance. Mm. And so she goes to Berlin to audition for this legendary dance troupe that is run by Tilda Swinton as Madame Blanc. And she's awesome. And so they immediately hire her and put her in the dorms. Lucky for her, there's an available bed because Chloe Grace Moretz just had a total freak out, as we saw before the credits. And she's not there anymore. And so it's Berlin and it's 1977, which is when the first movie came out. And so this time around, the idea is, well, gee, what was actually happening in Berlin in 1977? Let's talk a lot about the Bader-Meinhof group and then in no way connect it to the plot. Yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
And we'll also talk about lingering Nazi guilt and the Holocaust, because why not? Even though we're not going to connect that to the plot either. And then there's like some really ridiculous dancing and then crazy witch things. The end.
Yeah, there you go.
And it is 900 years long.
So long.
Well, but I was like, I asked my boss today, I was like, I've got to see Suspiria. Can I go at this time? And then she was like, okay, yeah, how long is it? I was like, oh, fuck, it's 900 hours long. She was like, yeah, you can't go.
And it doesn't need to be that long. It's slow moving and could easily have been 45 minutes shorter.
Okay.
Just my hot take.
No,
could
please.
Have been 45 minutes long. I'm down for that, too.
Jump in with your hot takes, Caitlin. How did you feel about this movie? Do you have a history with this movie? Have you seen the original?
I have seen the original a couple of times, and I just rewatched it in preparation for being on this podcast.
Okay.
So you're welcome.
Okay.
You saw two movies, and you saw zero.
I saw one. Movie. Yeah. That's being mean to me.
So were you a fan of Suspiria then, just even before you heard of this remake come in?
I wouldn't necessarily call myself a fan. I love the soundtrack, or like the score of the mm-hmm. original Suspiria. Very cool. And
Goblin.
The lighting design is cool. Aside from that, I'm like, okay, story. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it going to come? Is it? No, it's not. It's not going to come at any point. And I feel like, so there's certainly more story with the 2018 version. However, I didn't hate it. I didn't especially like it. I'm still kind of processing my feelings about it. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that there was a more discernible narrative. Did that narrative really make any sense? Especially toward the end, I was like, wait, who is what? And who is Dakota Johnson? And
how does it end? What? Did she take her wig off?
It all culminates.
Well, if you haven't seen the movie yet and you're listening to this, you might want to.
The movie opened on two screens on Friday.
All right, well, then cancel
maybe,
that.
Well, let's not like dig too deeply into spoilers.
Sure. Okay. So yeah, some crazy shit happens, and I don't really. And it's visually like, oh my god, and then narratively, it's like, what? And it's wild.
Yeah, I watched this movie and I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It was a movie. You know, everybody showed up to work and, you know, they put the lights where they're supposed to go. Shout out to that.
Lens cap was off the whole time.
Yes, yes. Everything just felt like enough. It was visually interesting enough where I was like, I'm not bored by what I'm looking at right now. There was way too much story. Like you said, Alonzo, that doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't understand why there was like this kind of like Nazi Holocaust
We have to remember the past, or else there will be a dancing academy full of witches. I don't know.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Right. What is the movie trying to say? I don't.
Yeah, it's. I don't understand how. I like that theme. So if we don't pay attention to the past, the guilt from that can haunt you. That's interesting to me.
Sure.
What that has to do in a movie about a dance troupe that's really a coven of witches, I have no idea.
That's kind
I don't
of
know.
What I like about the original, which it sounds like has almost nothing to do with the new one. Is
have
that
you
it's,
seen the original?
I've seen the original, yeah, a couple different times.
Okay.
And I really, really like it. It's very much my shit, and it's like not—it's not really trying to say any particular thing. It's just super fast, and it's visual, and it's like it's fun to watch, and it's an hour and a half long. All these are things I love. it's like I don't know. I rewatched the original Suspiria this morning, and like it's not hitting you over the head with much. It's just like here's this. Do you like it? If not, here's something else, and it just sort of moves so quickly that I don't know, adding a lesson about Nazis and dance demons just I don't know, seems like an extra hour.
I have loved all of Luca Guadagnino's movies before this, like, you know, big fan of Call Me By Your Name, but big fan of
I Am Love,
Bigger Splash, I Am Love. I have taught I Am Love to grad students, like,
oh wow,
because I think he's so great at as a filmmaker is when you look at those earlier films, he more than most filmmakers I would say knows how to convey the other three senses. Like everybody, sight and sound is your basic thing in all movies. But like if your movie can make me smell something or feel something or taste it, you know, like when people eat in I Am Love, like Tilda Swinton eats a plate of scampi that gives her an orgasm and you understand why. You know, when people are smelling the rosemary or they're walking through the apple orchards or whatever, like he gets all that stuff across. So when I heard he was doing this, I was like, oh, wow, okay, he's going to bring that level of intensity and sensuality to horror, like that's going to be, I hope I can take it, you mm-hmm. know. And then I was just bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
And yeah, just nothing ever winds up meaning anything, and it's just really ponderous and you know, there's they go for a kind of even the weather in this movie is over the top. Like it's so aggressively grim, and it's like this dance academy is literally 10 feet from the Berlin Wall, and you know it's just like it's so like it, and they're shooting and another sort of Germany in the 70s. Let's be like a really fucking depressing Fassbinder movie, and one of the ballet witches is actually Fassbinder's wife. You know,
but, oh, is that right? Which one?
I forget. Who knows? None of them talk or have personalities.
Right.
One of them. Was...
Great cackling in the movie, though.
Exactly.
Big
yeah.
fan of the cackling.
I mean, Alec Weck is one of them, and she, you know, and she's striking. She's like, well, that's Alec Weck. You can't mistake her for anyone else. Mm-hmm. You know, that incredible like African model.
Yeah.
But it's like they don't do anything or convey anything apart from like some menace sometimes. You know. So yeah, I was bored and disappointed, and by the end of it, angry and. People have been comparing this movie to Mother in terms of like how polarizing it is, and I liked Mother, but like after watching, it's like, oh, this is what Mother was like for people who hated Mother,
like me. I was also like trying to kind of watch it through like our podcast lens, Jamie, like the Bechdel cast lens, where it's like, okay, how is it treating women? And like on one hand, it's like, okay, there's like a sisterhood, and it's like there are hardly any men in the movie, and apparently the men who are there are played by Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
I didn't even realize that when I was watching it, but so it's mostly women, and they're all talking to each other, and you know, men. In fact, there's a scene where like. A guy comes in and they're like laughing at him. I don't, you know, not to spoil too much, but you know.
Oh, with the the detectives.
Yeah.
That scene was great. I love that.
I enjoyed that quite a bit. But other than that, it's like just like strictly women on screen, like doing their shit, and but also they're like actively maiming each other, and you know, there's like this whole conspiracy to like overthrow the other one, and it's so like I'm like, I don't, there's, it passes the Bechdel test a lot, but man, I don't think it's very good to women.
They're really catty and backbiting.
Also, the whole idea that like women are witches, and if you have a group of women together, they're probably, you know, doing spells because they're probably witches,
right? So. It's always weird seeing, I mean, like movies that feature all women and then, or but is directed by a man, and like how there's like these weird, like uncanny valley moments that you get out of stuff like that, where you're like, yeah, everyone's here, but it's still like we're male gazing out, and we're like, it's a man adapting another man's work that was written by a man. So,
April made the case actually that. She liked the movie for the most part, but she was like, this needed to be directed by a woman because of this, which is the same thing that she was saying about Halloween with the way that it handles the Jamie Lee Curtis character, that a woman director would have maybe brought a little more insight to how she's presented and what's driving
for
her.
Sure,
and that kind of thing.
She wouldn't have put that like crazy lady wig on Jamie Lee Curtis. Poor Jamie Lee Curtis.
This movie was supposed to be remade in 2008. And the person attached to direct it back then was David Gordon Green, director of the remake of Halloween.
Yeah, for a long time, David Gordon Green was going to do it, and then it never got off the ground, and then suddenly it was Luca Guadagnino, and then David Gordon Green went over to Halloween, so now they're like both in theaters, and I didn't really care for either one of them. but it's, I don't know what his version would have been like, and... I think I would have been more excited to see his version of this before I saw his version of Halloween.
Yeah. I like the end of the term of uncanny valley. Like that's like men, we just don't. The way we see the women's relationship, when you guys see it on screen, you're like, oh, no, that's not how it works. That's great.
Yeah.
What would you have preferred seeing in a movie? Or I guess I would ask Caitlin, since you saw the movie. What would you have preferred? Maybe that some themes that are brought up in the movie. Like, where did you feel like?
I mean, they start to go in this direction of like, kind of berating men for and like making fun of them for, you know, different reasons, especially if they've done something bad. I feel like if you are gonna make a movie about a coven of witches who have the power to like, you know, dismantle a system, like a destructive system, or to, you know, seek revenge on their oppressors or people who are doing bad things, like, great, let's see that. But instead they're just like any of the like students in the school who like dissent against what's happening or who are like, you guys are weird witches, I'm going to leave now. They like, they're punished. And I don't know. I didn't like that part of it. So I think it should just be like more like sisterhood and like, let's do this together rather than like turning on each other.
It certainly doesn't portray the idea of like look what men did to Germany. Look at all the horrors that they have wrought back, you know, 30 years ago when, you know, 30 years before the film takes place, and even now with, you know, these terrorists, blah, blah, blah. But the movie never sort of gives the impression of like a matriarchy would be so much better, because the one we get in the movie, they're also, like you said, they're undercutting each other.
Yeah.
They're like scheming and violent, and it's like, well, no, you're not really up in the game here.
Right. Yeah, as much as I enjoyed the scene where they kind of like mess with the cops, it is in like a very like juvenile kind of way, like what they're doing to them. Yeah, very much so.
And that's not even saying that like all women in all movies have to get along and be best friends, but it's like sometimes we're a movie that we talked about recently, because we've just been doing a lot of horror movies recently, is Carrie, where that's like an adaptation of a man's story, adapted by a man, filmed by a man, directed by a man. So we've got 4 degrees of dudes writing and adapting how they think teenage girls behave. And so what you get is like the opening scene to Carrie, which is teenage girls in a locker room whipping each other with towels, and a girl getting her period for the first time is a quart of blood. Like, it's just like gushing out of her. Like full uncanny valley. Like, this is just never how women have interacted with each other.
You're saying that's not true. That's not how that goes down. That's not.
No, it fully is.
Jamie and I did that earlier today.
Yeah.
Well, not to jump track, although I'm dying to not talk about Suspiria. do you think like Kimberly Pierce brings a significantly different take to her version of it?
I thought it did better in terms of Uncanny Valley, but I didn't like it that much.
I didn't see that one, so yeah,
isn't
I'm not sure.
I saw it like last week. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, just wondering. Yeah. I don't love it either, but I didn't know if, you know, since we're talking about it through that lens, if that made a big difference.
There is definitely like the ways that when, like the girls interacted in that movie. I mean, because of the source material, there's only so much you can do, but it felt a little more authentic. Same with Halloween, the more recent one.
Well, let's go around. How we recommend this in movies. Should they screen it, stream it, or skip it? Caitlin, I'll start with you.
I would say just because it's very long and slow, I'd skip this one.
I'll go with my girl's opinion. Our team.
Alonzo.
I know there are people who love this movie. You're wrong. I say skip it. I thought this was an endurance test.
Wow. Mm. Was this your sister's brothers?
Might be my sister's brothers. Maybe. Could be. But I'm less alone than you are.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I will say skip this movie. It's not even like, oh, man, in 2 hours and 36 minutes, I'll be glad that I got this out of it, because I don't know what that thing is in the movie, because I didn't know what I watched.
Right.
I mean, I was just so like, all right. There's old man dick in front of me right now. Would that still the Swinton's? Okay.
Which I'll never forget.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to see if we all can pass the Bechdel test in cinema.
Ooh.
You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hey everyone, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
here to tell you about Story Break, a writer's room podcast where every week we, the Hollywood geniuses behind Video Game High School, have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Thrill as we weave the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
We're going to double down on everything that made the prequels great. Jar Jar, Trade Federation, politics.
Gasp as we assemble a pantheon of heroes for the Kellogg Cinematic Universe.
We could get rid of Snap, Crackle, Pop. I wouldn't even miss them.
You're crazy.
They die in the second. Act.
Oh, come on!
And join us as we make fun of Matt as he struggles to name a single Beyonce song.
Well, yeah, put a finger on it. Sure, she wants to be Beyonce.
Put a finger on it. Beyonce's famous song.
Will we break the story?
Or will the story break us?
Find out by joining us in the writer's room every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are
Caitlin Durante,
Jamie Loftus,
Alonzo Duraldi,
Today, we are very lucky to have two hosts of the Bechdel cast. Now, as you may have guessed, their podcast named after the Bechdel test. A lot of people still don't know what that is, including Diane Lane, who I found out she accidentally called it the rectal test this week.
Honestly, my favorite fumble of not knowing what the test is. If you don't know what it is, don't know all the way.
I'm sure it gave Alison Bechdel middle school flashbacks.
Right. Like, was that about an ass or something?
Now, there are people out there, actually, who don't know what it is. Do you mind telling them? Can you explain the Bechdel?
Not at all.
Yes, would you please?
Do it.
It's a test that you apply, usually to movies, but really any
narrative-based
media. It requires that the movie has two female-identifying characters, preferably with names. There's, you know, different caveats of the test.
For our show, and to pass the Bechdel cast, you gotta have names.
Yeah, so the characters have to be named.
Okay.
Characters have to speak to each other about anything other than a man.
Okay.
And the reason we do names is because otherwise there's a lot of, like, movies that just squeak in when there's, like, a service character, like a waitress or someone selling clothes, and they're like, hey, do you want that? No. And then the movie gets away with it.
So it has to be kind of like important enough characters that we would need to know their name.
Sure.
To speak to each other.
Flight attendant number three.
Right.
Would that work?
No.
But if her name is Josie and she asks an innocuous question, it passes.
Okay. All right.
So, flawed system.
You gotta have standards.
Yeah.
All right, so the movie has to have at least two women in with names.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The women have to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the third one?
Their conversation cannot be about men or a man or anything male-oriented.
And it's just for two lines of dialogue. So there's, like,
our standards. I think there's other... Some of the, like, it has to... They have to talk about it for, like, 30 seconds or, you know, there's different caveats there, too. But
if so, 0% of movies pass. But
in the original Dykes to Watch Out For cartoon where Alison Bechdel created this test, the punchline of the joke is, the last movie I saw that fulfilled this was Alien because the two women talked about the alien.
Yep.
And not even that much in the movie if you rewatch it.
No.
Well, today we're gonna help some currently failing movies pass the Bechdel test. We're each going to take turns rewriting a film so that it can pass the test. As we just mentioned, the three criteria. The movie has to have at least two women named in it, the women have to talk to each other, and it has to be something about something besides a man. If you want to know more the info, you can go to BechdelTest.com. You can find the whole list of movies that passed the test. We're going to start with you, Alonzo.
Oh.
All right. You must help this movie pass. The first movie is Fargo, Coen Brothers movie, Best Picture. Now, there are two named characters in Fargo, two female characters, Marge Gunderson and Jean Lundegaard. They do not talk to each other, and there is no conversation that's not about men.
Okay, well, Marge obviously is pregnant for the entire film, and she is a member of law enforcement, and she is married. So we make that spouse a woman, and they talk about the kidnapping, and bam, you got a Bechdel passing movie.
Done.
Bam, Bechdel pass.
Yes. Tell me there's not a pregnant lesbian sheriff somewhere in the Midwest. I believe it.
Right.
Jamie, I'm going to go to you next. So the next movie is Back to the Future.
Oh, okay.
Back to the Future, there are three named female characters. Lorraine, Leah Thompson. Linda was Marty's sister. And Jennifer was Marty's girlfriend. They do talk to each other, but it's only about men.
It's only about men,
yeah. So how would you?
I think we take the main thrust of, I mean, Caitlin, this is your favorite movie.
Yes.
I'd say, first of all, Back to the Future, not a movie that I love, but we could go the all-female reboot route. However, then there would still be a rape scene in this movie. So what I suggest we do is we give Marty's mom a more fully realized buddy-up sequence with Jennifer, because we barely get to know Jennifer in that movie. We just kind of know she's horny for Marty, and he's not even that good of a boyfriend, it seems like. So I think there's a world in which Marty's mom goes to Jennifer and is like, listen, I know you're dating my son, but, like, we can do better. And then it's kind of Thelma and Louise.
Ooh.
They bail.
Yeah. Oh, but in a much better car.
Yes,
in a DeLorean.
Thelma and Louise, but but bear with me, a DeLorean.
Yes.
When they drive it off the cliff, they don't have to die. They get to go into a different time. Yes.
They live, and they go into the future because going into the past for women is a very bad idea.
Yeah. Doesn't Jennifer sleep through all of Back to the Future Part 2?
Yes.
Yes, she does. Yes, she
does. And 3.
Yeah. We all slept through Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah, I do not talk. We do not talk about Back to the Future 3.
Okay.
Horrible. All right, Caitlin, for you, we have The Avengers. Now, there are more than two female characters with names in this movie. There's Agent Maria Hill. There's Black Widow. There's Pepper Potts. None of them talk to each other. So there needs to be a conversation with about something other than a man.
Okay, easy. So Iron Man becomes Iron Woman.
Okay.
We're talking about the first Avengers, right? So we don't.
Yes.
Spider-Man isn't there yet.
No, okay, Spider-Man's not there yet.
But we do have the Jeremy Renner character. What's
Hawkeye.
His name? Hawkeye becomes.
It was originally called what's
Hawk
his name?
Woman.
Could still be Hawkeye. Could
still be Hawkeye. Is a DC character.
Thank you.
Actually.
Thor is Thor, but a woman.
Okay, Thora.
Thora Birch.
Wow.
They've actually been doing female Thor in the comics. That's a thing.
Hell
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's so cool.
Who are the Captain America is
Sam.
Yeah, Captain America, but a woman.
Yes.
And who am I missing?
Hulk.
Hulk is
She-Hulk.
She-Hulk. Yes.
So, yeah, just basically gender swapping everybody's, and then easy pass.
So the Black Widower?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a real. But he's like in the throes of being a widower. He's sad.
He's crying.
Very black insane. Armband.
Yeah.
Sitting Shiva.
All right, Alonzo, let's come back to you. This is the classic war film, Apocalypse Now. This one is anti-Bechdel.
Is there any women in it at all?
Besides the Playboy bunnies?
Oh, that's my God. Yes. I forgot about the Playboy bunnies.
There are no named female characters in this movie. Non-existent female characters that don't talk to each other. There's no conversation.
You know what? Make that whole movie about the Playboy bunnies.
Ooh.
Like flying into Vietnam, getting in that helicopter, not knowing what's going to be on the other end of it. Who do they leave at home? Do they feel safe? Are they for the war? Is Hef making them do this? I think there's a whole other movie waiting to be told.
What if it's like the bunnies kill Hef and that's the movie? A Playboy bunny uprising.
That's right. In 1968, everybody was revolting, you know.
Yeah, like they're like, you know what? This is actually our house now. leave us the fuck alone. And then they're like...
I'd be all into
Suspiria.
That.
They're just witches who, yeah.
witches who live in a house.
Yeah.
And they've already got a grotto, so you know who knows what they'll get up to down there.
Do not go in the grotto.
All right, Caitlin, for you, we have a Mission Impossible Fallout. Now, there are four named female characters. There's Ilsa Faust, Erica Sloan, the White Widow, and Julia.
Wait, which was Julie?
That was Michelle Monaghan. That's Tom Cruise's wife.
Mrs.
Oh, I was like, and Julia as herself.
This is Julia! Exclamation
Julia.
Point. Now this
Julia
movie,
Child, actually.
This movie, the only conversations are about men, so there needs to be a conversation with the women about something other than a man.
Okay, so if I recall correctly, toward the end of that movie, Julia. And
Julia
as herself.
That's like Jeff.
And
when
who
ran.
Is it?
Ilsa Faust.
They're in a scene together and they're talking, but I think it's about old Tommy.
I think so.
Tommy Crew.
Tommy Crew.
So instead, they're like, hey, let's blow this popsicle stand. There's a bomb. Let's get out of here. Like, we don't need to be involved with this. Let Tommy die. And then, if they mention him, okay. But then they say that we should leave him to die. Mm. And then they go off and they're like, it's weird how he keeps, no, this is still not passing the Bechdel. It's hard.
What if they like start by saying, okay, Tom Cruise, we know him, we love him. He is participating in a pretty scary religious organization. And then the conversation becomes, where is Michelle Miscavige? And then they exchange their theories.
Yes.
and then it's just kind of some discourse okay. about where Michelle's at.
Wait, it's not Michelle. It's,
It's Shelly.
Shelly, you're right. Shelly. You're right. Sorry, Shelly.
Sorry,
Scavage.
I was being formal.
Sorry, yeah. Her friends call her Shelly. I just want more scenes of Angela Bassett talking about plutonium with people. It could be with women, and I don't see why not. Like, she and Ilsa Fowles could talk about plutonium, because I saw in the trailer that Angela Bassett was talking about plutonium, and I was like, I want this whole movie to be Angela Bassett talking about plutonium.
Can we have an ASMR video of that? I would love that.
Also, that could plutonium. Tie into the Back to the Future that needs plutonium
there
to
you go.
Power
there
the
is.
DeLorean.
There it is.
That is now being driven by Marty's mother and girlfriend.
Yes.
And
there we
all
go.
Comes back.
Part of the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now this will be our this last one. It goes to you, Jamie.
Okay.
Because Alonzo, my brain is exploding that Alonzo hates the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, which I think is
I'm
one
right
of the most.
Right there with him.
Wow!
Bam, 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 bam.
Haters in the room.
All right, yo, shout out to the haters.
I'm a fan. You,
all right,
me, Ricky.
You. Okay, okay.
Kaylin literally made me watch 10 straight hours on the 4th of July.
Yes. Yeah. A lovely way to celebrate America. Watch a movie about Middle
evil.
Earth. All right, so the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, has two named female characters. There's Galadriel, played by Cate Blanchett, and there's Arwen of Aragorn, played by Liv Tyler. Now, they do not talk to each other, so they need something to talk about other than a man.
Okay, so if we're having them meet?
Yes.
Okay, so if we're having those two characters meet.
I mean, we can have them meet. They can, maybe they already know each other. Like, we can create a new
they're
history.
They're both elf maidens.
They're
so,
both,
like,
so it's crazy that, you know, they wouldn't have met in 10 hours, nothing. Spoiler, that whole franchise doesn't pass the Bechdel test. It's infuriating. I think, you know, we could give them kind of a fun, almost kind of a book club vibe to them.
Okay.
Where they're, I mean, they can talk about men, but they also talk about 50 Shades of Grey. That they're both meeting.
Which one's the Jane Fonda character, though?
Oh, I think that that would be, is it Cate Blanchett's Galadriel?
Yeah.
That's the Jane. And then I think, oh, who would Liv Tyler be? She's so bland. I don't, she doesn't really
Mary
match.
Mary Steenburgen.
I guess she kind of would be.
They
Mary's,
can knock back flagons of mead.
They're kicking back some mead. They're talking about, you know, I know that Gollum's technically gendered male, but I would argue Gollum's a bit of a genderqueer icon. And so they're talking Gollum. They're like, man, I just wish, you know, where's Gollum? Gollum's late. And who's Gollum in the book club universe?
Candace Bergen.
harsh.
Hide your jewelry, girl. Gollum's coming over.
And then Gollum comes, and then we're having a party. It's great. I want a brunch movie with, Liv Tyler, Cate Blanchett, and Gollum.
That's what's up.
Or maybe we could have She-Hobbits played by, like, I don't know, Miriam Margulies and Lucy Davis?
Mm, yes.
Oh, invite them. Yes. Rosie the Hobbit gets named in the first movie, I'm pretty sure.
She does. Yeah.
And
yes.
Sam yes. goes and marries her
yes.
at the
yes.
end. Anyway.
All right, bring them all. Bring them all to my
Hobbit's
stupid
invited.
Brunch movie I'm writing.
To Tolkien Book Club.
Well, if In a dream world, hopefully, I mean, these movies would all be made and they would be available on Filmstruck.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
I mean, one can wish. One can wish. It is, it's almost time for us to go, unfortunately, but it's time for Staff Picks. Every week, we ask a panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out. Any movie at all. Can be in the theater, streaming, what have you.
Come back to me.
Already? Caitlin, I'll start with you. Actually, I'll start with Jamie. I've been starting with Caitlin. Let's change things up.
Okay.
Jamie, I'll start with you.
Locked and Loaded, always got a plugged out. I've got to be like, hey, have you seen Doubt lately? If not, it's evergreen. It's always good. It's always, we've got, you know, all killers to the point where sometimes it's a little distracting where they're kind of sparring with each other. Like, who's going to serve the most looks in this scene?
You came to act for the Seymour Hoffman, yeah. Your Meryl Streep. I came to act today.
they all show up
yeah,
to the point
do.
Where it's like, I'm tired, but I respect what you're doing. I got to pause, go get a water, come back. I don't know, Caitlin, I love Doubt. I love Doubt so much. I saw it twice in theaters, which is honestly fucked up. but I saw, yeah, I don't know. I'm from New England, so I connected hard with like scary religious people over like, you know, like overacting, I guess. And I could watch it a million times.
Yeah. I wonder if, is Doubt streaming anywhere? Is it?
No, it's
I
hard
don't
to
believe so. It's hard to find.
It's actually not hard to find. It's, you know, it's.
I bet it's at your local library on DVD.
What are libraries?
And to be honest, you know, no one is like, oh no, we have to make sure all the illegal streams of Doubt aren't up. pretty easy to find.
BitTorrent Doubt.
They're like, yeah. Shit,
whenever
so
I walk
much
by
money.
The blanket with the bootleg DVDs on it, there's always a whole stack of Doubt.
It's the highest stack. Caitlin, what do you got for us?
I would like to recommend Paddington and Paddington 2.
Yes!
You just found your boy over there.
I believe Paddington is still streaming on Netflix.
It's leaving after November, so hop on that.
Hop on. Get there. Get there right now. And then Paddington 2 is, you know, available for, you know, renting and purchasing and everything like that.
It's right next to the Doubts.
Right next to the Doubts. The Paddington Extended Universe, I love it so much. They're terrific. Love my little Paddington bear.
Alonzo will cut a motherfucker.
Paddington 2 is still my favorite film of 2018.
Yes.
And I will brook no contradictions.
Alonzo, what do you got for us?
Okay, I'm gonna put on my dork hat here. Frederick Wiseman is one of the world's greatest living documentarians, and he's got a new one. Monrovia, Indiana. It is, as of this weekend, will be at least in New York and Los Angeles and popping up in other places as well. It is shorter than Suspiria.
Okay. You have my attention.
Which is kind of amazing because Wiseman stuff is usually the longest thing you can ever find in the theater. And it is about a small town in Indiana called Monrovia. And the thing about Wiseman is he doesn't use music. He doesn't interview anybody. He just sort of like lets the camera pick things up, and we sort of have to figure out on our own, like, what's important and what are we gleaning from things. And he loves process. So you get, like, city council meetings, and you get, like, organizational meetings for, you know, the school, and you see, like, behind the scenes at the pizza parlor and, like, the meat department of the grocery store, and just, you know, you see how, like, you know, the wheat gets dumped into the giant trucks that cart it away, or how the pigs get, you know, classified and separated and put onto their trucks or whatever. And, you know, it's not one of those movies where, like, he spent 20 years there and you follow the town. Like, it's you know, he went for a while and captured all this stuff and put it together. And it just is gorgeous and interesting. And, you know, I just sort of love the minutiae that he captures in these movies. And I feel like I know this town having seen the film. And you know, there's so much of a back catalog that you should check out with him. And it's all streaming on Canopy, by the way, Canopy. Like, I love Ex Libris. I love The Store. Like, he's got a lot of really great movies, but his new one is in theaters now. And if you can see a Wiseman movie on the big screen, I highly recommend it. Monrovia, Indiana.
That's what's up, yo. Movie I'm recommending this week is finally, you know, we're in the Halloween season, so I'm knocking out all the scary joints. I finally watched Hereditary.
Ooh, fun one.
Oh, guys, so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh,
was it fun? Fun?
Yes.
Is that the word?
I was having a blast.
I was smiling during that movie at times. I was like, because it's so, it gets so, I don't know.
I was smiling. It was torture. 2 hours of torture for me.
It was fun and a Kegel exercise all in one.
Yes. I feel like it is torturous. I mean, when it goes there, it goes there. Actually, in ways that I kind of wish Suspiria did, where, like, it's just, I didn't see the trailer. I mean, the first thing I heard was how amazing the trailer to Hereditary is. It's going to be the best movie of the year. You got to watch the trailer to Hereditary. So I was like, well, I'm definitely not going to watch the trailer. Because if it's that good, then I just want to go in blind and just be, like, surprised by everything I see. And I had no idea where the story was going. When it got to that point, I was just like, oh, what? What? Oh, it's so great. Toni Collette. I mean,
kills it.
So kills
very
it.
Very good. So,
the, kills it.
The kid in that movie, the whole time I was like, who are you? Who are you? He was on a Nickelodeon show.
Yes.
The Naked Brothers Band. I was a big fan of them. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad he's thriving.
He's also in the new Jumanji.
He's also in the new Jumanji.
Yeah, and I always get them confused because there's two of the brothers. And the one in the Alex one. Wolf is the one in Hereditary. Yeah, he's great. Like, so he does for fear what Claire Danes used to do for crying.
Ooh.
Like, you've never seen anybody do that in a movie before, and it's just like, it's so nakedly, like, I don't care how this looks, I'm going to convey the hell out of this emotion, and, like, he blew me away.
Yeah, great. Really great. The whole cast, Ann Dowd,
yep.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Poor Gabriel Byrne. Mm. All my man does is get bad news in that movie. Every time the phone rings, I was like, do not answer that phone, Gabriel Byrne. Do not talk to anybody. You are not going to like what you hear.
Go off the grid for a couple days.
Right? For real.
Millie Shapiro, who was Matilda on Broadway. She plays the daughter.
Was she Matilda?
In the Broadway show, yeah.
No way.
She was great.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen her before, but I thought she was fantastic. Oh, Hereditary, y'all. It's rent it online. Check it out. It's so much fun.
F Cinema Score. Your sign of quality.
Next week we'll be talking about Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, brother.
Oh, wow.
I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that.
Oh, next week we'll be talking about Bohemian Crapsody. Thank you. With Katie Walsh will be here. That'll be exciting.
More like fun. Bohemian.
There we go. There we go.
Swish. We got there.
Can we get a gong in here?
Everywhere the wind blows.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing, y'all, please leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. This week we got one from Bully TJB. They say, I just really love this podcast. It is so nice to hear diverse voices talking about film in a very honest way. Alonzo is hashtag intellectual bear goals.
I don't know what that means, but thank you.
April brings an always welcome voice and view, and Ricky gives you the joy you loved on Wham Bam Pow times 10. Well, thank you very much. They wanted to say, but I have to give extra love to guest extraordinaire Drea Clark.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, that's what's up. Whenever she is on, you can feel how much she loves film with everything she says. This podcast is truly What Is Good With Me. Thank you, Bully.
Thank you.
TJB. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Caitlin.
Woo! Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Fantastic to have you here. Tell the people where they can find you online, where they can listen to the podcast, all that good stuff.
You go first.
Sure. I mean, you can find our podcast, Bechdelcast, online on all the stuff at Bechdelcast on Twitter and Instagram. Bechdelcast.com is probably the easiest place to find us.
Yeah. That's spelled BECHDEL.
We can always forget to spell it. We have new episodes every Thursday. And I'm on Instagram. I got kicked off Twitter again, so I'm on Instagram at Jamie Christ Superstar.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Caitlin Durante.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Do you, the questions that you ask on Facebook, do you do that on Twitter as well?
Oh, Movie Talk with Caitlin?
Movie Talk, yeah. Movie Talk with Caitlin is great.
Thank you. I need to revive it on Twitter, I think. And okay. I did for like 3 days and then I stopped it, but I think I'm going to start it up again.
I'm so ready for it to be back in full swing. There was a real golden age of Movie Talk with Caitlin on Facebook.
It was fantastic. It was so fun.
Thank you.
Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, please tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. We have a WhoShot line. That number is WSY8031664.
We want to hear from you.
Please call us and let me know when you have a McRib, yo. You know?
Thoughts about the Wachowskis?
Yes.
Anything.
Holler at us. Alonzo, a pleasure.
Always, sir. Always a pleasure.
Un placer. Our producer, our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that is What Is Up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.